Hello there, it's another edition of the Selbia's Godcast from Las Vegas, Nevada, alongside TJ Zuppi. I'm Zach Meisel. We are joined at Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino by Ryan Lewis of the Akron Beacon Journal. What's going on, Ryan?
Hey guys, how you doing?
Oh, I'm doing good too, by the way. I'm over here.
Yeah, okay.
TJ's in a bad mood already.
Day two of the winter meetings. Recording this on Tuesday, we've got another 48 hours or so here before all the teams will head back to their respective cities and kind of mull over what all went down here and where they stand with trade negotiations, free agent negotiations, and whatnot. What have you made from your first 36 hours of specifically the winter meetings? Ryan has also been in Vegas a lot longer than anyone should be. But just this event in this sort of setting, what have you made of it?
I think it's just a situation where you may be able to bring some people together in a quicker setting than normal. We were talking with the Antonin and Chernoff yesterday, and they were joking about how they got to sneak out of the room for lunch, and that was a big deal for them. And it's a borderline circus and a little mini city that just converges, and it's just a whirlwind of news and rumors and a lot of discussions and texts and losses in blackjack
and a lot of bullshit. Let's just put that out there.
So
a
much
lot
bullshit. Of bullshit.
See, I can say that, can I?
Yeah, you
I
can.
I can't write that. Bullshit.
No, yeah, that, no, there's a lot of bullshit
lot of
that happens.
Let it all
here.
Out. Anything else you want to
that's
say
fun.
That you normally can't say or write?
Yeah, I don't ever want to play that poker game again that you brought me to, ever.
We don't need to talk about that here.
No, we don't, but that was really bad.
I mean, there's a lot of conversations people are having with almost everybody. Teams are considering almost anything, including the Indians, when it comes to the types of returns that they're talking about for Kluber and Bauer. They have talked about established major leaguers. They've talked about guys that are way down in the lower levels of the minor leagues. They have talked about almost anything with anybody, and that's the whole purpose of an offseason, to not only gauge what things you're going to do, but also how teams value your players, give you a better sense on throughout the season. If you get to a point where you might be interested in a player, you've already had discussions, you've had a baseline established where you can draw from it. And then there's just so much shit thrown at the wall that really doesn't mean a freaking thing when it comes to all the rumors that are out there. Maybe 3% of the things that get thrown out there actually end up happening. So you have to have your filter up a little bit and sort of take everything with a grain of salt.
Well, you try anything once, right? Especially in Vegas. So I think
that place we ate lunch yesterday.
A team, when the Yelp review says 2 stars, I think you bolt as quickly as possible, right?
Mistakes were made.
Well, yeah. you read the Yelp review aloud.
I'm pretty sure the waiter heard and then made sure we ordered so we could leave.
We had like 3 waiters, including the manager, who I think kept his hand on Ryan's shoulder. Jordan Bastian, now of Cubs.com, the trader. I think he kept his hand on his shoulder for what, like 3 minutes as he was talking, just making it very personable?
It definitely well beyond normal decorum.
So I think he thought we were one of those secret shopper Yelp reviewer type people. That's what I think happened.
If only. But, like, if you're the Indians, yeah, you might as well explore anything and everything. But I think we keep coming back to this, and I don't want to rehash things we've talked about in each of like the last 12 podcasts, but there are very limited avenues in which they can get better, and they have to get better, that don't involve trading a starting pitcher. And I want to kind of get Ryan's take on this. Like, if you're Chris Antonetti and Mike Chernoff and you're sitting up there, do you feel like you have no choice but to trade either Kluber or Bauer?
If they want to reallocate the resources like they'd like to, I don't think there's another avenue where they can get the price tag that they want. And the first step of any trade is to say, okay, we'd like to move this and we'd like to get package X in return. But that's the really easy part. The harder part is to find the team that also lines up with you in terms of need, surplus, opportunity. And so whether or not they'd rather move Kluber or Bauer or a position player, I don't think that's going to matter as much as what they can get in return for that player. There, very rarely, I think, are you going to find just an easy avenue for the perfect trade that just works for everybody. And you're going to have to kind of fudge the numbers a little bit in your favor if you can to try to get the package that you want. But Kluber and Bauer have the type of price tag that the Indians, I think it's pretty clear, the Indians don't want to move off of whatever their perceived value of those players are on the open market. They don't want to move off of that kind of pedestal at all. And I think kind of the key is to try to be patient but also diligent in terms of wanting to make the move that you need and valuing those guys like you have all offseason and not trying to panic or move off of that value.
It's hard.
It has to be really difficult to see different moves being made and hearing different things about different teams and not pulling the trigger on something right now.
Well, I mean, but, not to cut you off, but I have a pretty, knowing what we know about how they go in these negotiations with the sorts of price tags that they have.
Is this before the talks intensify?
Yes, it's well before they intensify. I don't think when it comes to Kluber or Bauer, they're going to budge too much off of that. The thing you want to avoid, and Zach, we've talked about this for many podcasts, is the need to feel like you have to do this.
Right.
You cannot, regardless of whether or not you can change the rest of your roster, they can't make this move because they feel like they're pressured to have to do it. Because when you feel that pressure, that's when you're prone to make mistakes. You can't make, or it's unfortunate when you have to make deals from a sense of desperation. And they maybe got to that point last year with the bullpen. And to their credit, they remained patient through a long stretch of games that were really tough to watch with that bullpen blowing it every single night. And they ended up coming away with guys they felt were controllable, fit what they needed, didn't end up going their way in the postseason, as we know. But you don't want to be in a position where you feel like you have to make that trade, because teams know when you have to make a deal too, and they're not going to go to the table and give you exactly what they want if they know that you don't have the capability of walking away. Now, yesterday in the suite, they assured us that they have enough of their safeguards, as they put it, in place, that they're going to feel comfortable walking away. And I hope that's the case. It needs to be the case for a deal like this, because you're risking a pretty substantial thing in breaking up a rotation that has been the backbone and what they have said is going to lead them deep into the postseason year after year after year. You know, we've talked about the reasons why it makes sense, but just because it makes sense doesn't mean that every trade makes sense. And it does get, you know, as you get closer to the finish line, I think it gets a little bit more nerve-wracking for fans to think about it, because you're trying to thread a pretty thin needle here. It's not to say it can't be done, and in the past they've made some pretty substantial moves that ended up paying off.
But none still, like this.
But still, this is so unique where they're looking to trade one of their guy, one of their frontline starters in the midst of a period of time where they're still trying to win the division and ultimately win the World Series. It's a really weird position to be in. I know we're seeing a few teams sort of in a similar position. The Cubs are the one that comes to mind. They're trying to shift Milwaukee. Around their payroll, Milwaukee too. But it leaves you with fewer teams that you can converse with, because maybe the Reds don't match up quite as well as the Dodgers do as far as timelines go for the players that you would get back. But what happens if the Reds or the Braves or the Padres or anybody else that's seeking a frontline starter actually offers you the better package as far as value goes, but it doesn't line up with your timeline? That's what I'm really going to be intrigued to see what they do when it comes down to it, because as they said yesterday, they're less concerned with the timelines as far as when they're all going to slide in the next few years, is they're more concerned with how do we get the best package possible.
Yeah, ideally you'd get someone who can help you in 2019, fortify your lineup a little bit, and also get pieces that are going to help you in the future too and extend this window. But you're right, like, and I feel like we've said this a lot, I think with each passing day they lose a tiny bit of leverage, and teams know, and the other teams need to get on with their off seasons too. You know, if the Dodgers really want Kluber, they can't wait around till January to figure out if they can make a move. Because if they're going to be dealing some outfielders, they might need to get in the Nick Castellanos sweepstakes or the Bryce Harper sweepstakes. So it's, this is like, you know, everything in Vegas is like on steroids. You know, your meal, the portion size is huge. The price is huge. You're blowing more money than you ever would at the Cleveland casino, maybe, or a Cleveland restaurant. And like, it's the same thing with this.
He's doing it with a smile.
Yeah. Your trade talks when you're sitting in your office at Progressive Field, like, they're, I'm guessing that they are more intensified here, just in terms of you're having them more frequently, you're under the same roof, you can meet in person. I think they're just more real, and it kind of pushes you closer to that finish line where... And the thing is, the Indians could get to the finish line, have final deliberations, and realize, you know what? Yeah. We aren't going to get the value for Kluber or Bauer that makes this a slam dunk for us, so we're not going to do it at all. And that kind of leads me to what I wanted to talk about, though, which is, if they don't make this sort of trade, what can they do? You know, if they find someone to take Encarnacion and his $20 million... Is that enough money to go fill all the holes in this roster? Can they find someone to take Kipnis? But is there any other way to do this? I mean, they've already traded Gomes, so that's one step, and you can't undo that. So
and yesterday, to even build off of that, I mean, we tried to nail them down a few times on kind of the idea of payroll. Is it a massaging of the payroll to redistribute it elsewhere? Is it trying to cut the payroll? Do you have the capability to increase even a little bit? And Antonetti has kind of, as normal for him, sidestepped it.
Well, he said
directly addressed.
He said he was being honest, that he didn't know. Do you buy that?
No,
Indians came to the winter meetings not knowing if they could have a $190 million payroll or a $110 million payroll?
I think they have
payroll?
A pretty substantial idea of what they want to do. But what in listening to him and then reading it back, and then transcribing, reading it back again, it felt like to me what he was more saying is that there are several different scenarios here where the payroll can end up in multiple different places. And he didn't want to, for a certainty, say that the payroll is going to decrease, stay the same, increase, because he doesn't know where it's going to end up. And they're not going to say they clear some payroll in one of these trades, but they don't find a player or a situation that is worth spending that extra money on at that very moment. He doesn't want to feel like he's already said they're going to, and now they're not going to, and that he lied in that situation. They're not going to spend the money just to spend the money. They're looking for the right opportunities. And if that includes, this is just me coming up with a scenario, but say AJ Pollock falls into a realm where Michael Bourne did a couple of years ago, Nick Swisher did a couple of years ago, or even Edwin Encarnacion. Now, maybe those aren't all the greatest deals to point to, but when a unique situation falls in their lap, they've shown that they're willing to go about things in a different manner than we're typically accustomed to seeing. And that's what I almost felt like he was saying, that if they get to a position where somebody falls into their lap and now they're going to be adding payroll as opposed to cutting it, that they're not opposed to doing that. But it all depends on the situation, the timeline, who it is, who they believe in, those sorts of things.
They do have a lot of money coming off after 2019. Kipnis, Encarnacion, I think there are others.
Alonso, if they want.
Alonso, yeah. But so, there is... like there's
522 plate appearances, okay.
There is flexibility. Like,
no more than that.
If they can, especially with Carrasco now locked up, like you can kind of see where maybe, and maybe it's not this winter, maybe it's next winter, but like there's probably going to be an opportunity to go add like someone on a 4-year, $60 million deal, something like that. But all right, Ryan, you're Chris Antonetti. What the hell are you doing?
I think I do move Kluber or Bauer, and it's, but it's not, you know, I think Chernoff was saying yesterday that it's not always as simple as a situation where you know that you're rebuilding and you're trying to build your farm system, or you know that you have to contend this year right now. And that direction is very clear. The Indians are kind of trying to fight a war on two fronts here, where they're just trying to reallocate the resources in a way that they can compete now and sort of move their chess pieces to set themselves up possibly to make more of a run in free agency next winter if they want to, if they decline some club options. It's just really setting up their pieces the way that they want to now and in the future. And that's a more difficult thing to do, where you're casting a wider net on your possibilities, but in terms of the players that you want to acquire, you're actually sort of narrowing that window.
Well, and it's like one move that you make is going to have a domino effect too, because if you go a certain direction, then you probably have to do other, like, that's why I thought the Gomes trade was setting us up for a Kluber or a Bauer trade, because you're clearly going to use that $7 million you've saved on the bullpen or the outfield, but that's probably not enough to fix all your issues. So then now you're going to trade Kluber or Bauer, and then you're going to have quite a bit to be able to sign some relievers, something like that.
And the big variable here is we don't know where what their window of payroll actually is.
Right.
And so what I took away from what Chernoff said is that they're not operating with a concrete number that they just do whatever you want, but stay under this number. It is a situation where they can be flexible, and if the right thing comes along, they can extend beyond their means, which they've done for a couple of years now.
But they're not going to spend it just to spend it. And I agree with that to an extent. But if you get into this season and you didn't spend the extra money that maybe you freed up, and glaring issues in the outfield or the bullpen are sitting there, and nothing was done to address it, and that money, the payroll has gone down semi-significantly, then that is absolutely going to be a fair criticism of them. You can't not spend the money, still have the holes, and not address it ever, and then say, well, this is just what's happened. Well, no, you had an opportunity, you created for yourself. I understand the whole idea of spending it on the right people, and I don't think you should just go out there and just throw money at people, but certainly it'll be within the realm of criticism if they don't address some of their issues with the money that they've cleared up.
Right. If I'm Antonetti and I can get the value that I perceive is fair or even beyond fair for me, this outfield right now, this outfield outlook is just so barren, and the bullpen has so many holes that, yeah, I think I would deal one of those guys. And the question remains, if you move Kluber, say you get Verdugo and a couple of the pieces that aren't going to cost you a lot, they're going to be able to play now, you're going to have control over them, that's almost the perfect situation if you can get that value. But how much of that $17 million that you just saved is going to be reallocated back into the roster?
Yeah.
And they're in a position where I understand wanting to move pieces around because the roster is a little more top-heavy, but that money also needs to be able to be used in a valuable way, sort of along lines of what you're saying, but they can't just save that money and go home and say that they're done.
Yeah, if it's not used, like if the payroll drops from 140 to 110 and like they trade Kluber and don't sign a couple of free agent relievers or a free agent outfield or something, like the fans deserve to skewer them, the front office
and
ownership.
It'd be the wrong time.
We will have to do that and not think twice about it. I'm still like, they haven't said that that's the case. Anyone who thinks that that's going to happen is just completely assuming things that...
I think it's the same thing that they do with injuries and guys on rehab. And a lot of times things get read into non-committal towards things, but I just don't think they like to promise anything to anybody, because they realize things come up, situations change, and they never want to be put in a position where they said one thing and did another. And so that's why they always keep it so vague, whether it's with injuries, their payroll, whatever. It's that they don't want to ever be held to what they said. Now, it gets really frustrating for us. It gets really frustrating for the fans. That's not to say I don't understand why they do what they do.
People like when we talk fake trades.
Let's go.
The Dodgers seem to make the most sense, don't they? Do we agree on this?
Verdugo checks all the boxes for what the Indians you would perceive would be looking for.
Yeah.
Is he enough of a centerpiece?
He's like the... He is the minimum standard of a centerpiece in my mind.
So that secondary piece better be
the secondary and tertiary pieces need to be...
Did you just Google that?
Not look at my Google search history. Get out of here. Those pieces, yeah, you need more. it kind of sucks from a standpoint of, like, Kluber for Bellinger, just one for one, is a win for the Indians. Even though, like, the Dodgers could get away with that. They have enough outfield depth. They can go sign Bryce Harper if they really wanted to. I don't think they're going to move Bellinger. I think that's out. I'm sure the Indians asked. That was probably the first thing they mentioned. Knowing them, they probably asked for Bellinger, Verdugo,
Knowing them, they've probably
Bueller, Kershaw.
They've probably asked multiple times, including once today.
Yeah.
Are you sure?
I tried
are
to get...
Sure? Are you
now?
Sure?
We tried so hard to get Antonetti to kind of admit that they were, like, annoying, pestering other teams and asking for way too much, but of course, he didn't want to get into that. But what... Like, what's a sensible deal for both teams? Because, like, Verdugo... He's 22. He's had some big league experience, so he's pretty much ready to be an everyday player. He can hit. He's a left-handed hitter, but he can hit lefties and righties. He seems like a plus bat. Like some people have said, he kind of reminds him of Michael Brantley, guy who doesn't strike out much, high on base percentage, not going to hit 40 home runs, but maybe 15. But a cannon of an arm.
And that's not to say he can't add power potential.
It's a really good player. I think the issue...
It's a great start.
Yeah, issue fans have, and I understand it, is you're dealing Kluber, who's finished in the top three of the Cy Young voting, I think, for the last 6 years, and you're getting back a question mark. We don't know exactly what Verdugo would be, and there's probably going to be growing pains. Like, I don't know that you're going to be a better team in 2019. Now, throw Jock Peterson in there. And maybe a starting pitcher. They have plenty. Alex Wood, Kenta Maeda.
I think if you're taking any salary back, then that opens up the possibility to have a fourth piece in this.
Yeah, I was going to say a prospect. Like, I know that catching prospect.
If you're clearing just the
$17 million,
then I probably would be able to find a way to get back three pieces. If I'm taking back any sort of salary whatsoever, I'm going to want probably one additional thing. Not something of great value, but something useful to me for taking back that salary.
But here's the issue, and this is what I want to ask. For Chris Sale, the White Sox, I know he hasn't panned out yet, and it's a little different because the White Sox were rebuilding and they just wanted to accumulate really high projected 19-year-olds. But they got the top prospect in baseball and then some for Chris Sale. So are you telling me that Corey Kluber, all he can fetch with 3 years left on his deal, which is what Sale had, is the number 32 prospect in baseball and, like, a couple other pieces? Does that seem enough when it's framed that way?
No, it doesn't. Not when it's framed that way. Because you would almost always take the higher ceiling guy over the quantity. And the quantity is important, but I think you always want that bigger centerpiece as a part of it.
Well, that's why you'd rather have Bellinger than, like,
correct.
Verdugo and three other good prospects.
Well, here, the issue... It's kind of what we've been talking about as far as timelines converging between teams. They probably could do better if you're just looking at it from a prospect ranking standpoint. Every team ranks prospects different. They're not all reading MLB Pipeline and Baseball America and using that as the Bible. Some teams evaluate prospects differently. So that's why you might see it might be head-scratching for one team to make a trade. And they go, this guy isn't very good, but maybe by their evaluations, they think he's better.
Sure.
All of that aside.
Like, that's Kluber. They liked his strikeout rate. They thought they could tweak some things with his mechanics, and he might be able to be a major league pitcher. He wasn't on the Padres' top 30 prospects.
Right.
But
everyone has different evaluations that they go by.
But when you're trading Corey Kluber, you hope to get more than someone who you identify
as a
good
tradesman. My point being, if they made a trade with the Braves or they made a trade with the Reds, they could probably get back more value in a deal like that if they got back prospects that are a year, 2 years, 3 years away.
Agreed.
Than they could with the Dodgers in this particular trade. And that's where it becomes this really difficult balance for them. Kind of getting back to the idea that you want to take the best package, but you also need to take the best package that is going to not completely cripple you from accomplishing your goals in 2019. Because, yes, they want to stay as competitive and create as many chances to get to the postseason as possible. And there's value in that. But there's also a limited amount of time that Francisco Lindor is going to be playing shortstop for you. So you can't just completely look to the future. The division's wide open. You want to take advantage of that. You don't want to walk away in the middle of that just being right in your lap.
Yeah.
So it becomes this really difficult situation where you have to ask what's better. The better package as far as value goes, or the guys that can slide in and help me next year. And I'm sure they're trying to find some way to balance both of those things, but maybe that leads them down to the path, as far as fake trades and speculation goes, maybe that leads them down the path to a three-team deal. talked a little bit about that yesterday. You have a number of teams that would be interested in Kluber, Bauer, that don't align timeline-wise with the Indians. Who's to say that they can't work out something with another team? You know, there's plenty of teams that are looking to trade off major league pieces. Why can't they get on that? Why can't they take back the better package and then flip those prospects for things that are a little bit more of a proven commodity?
Which is maybe the route they have to go. Because, again, they're looking for a fairly specific window of players. And that's what I mean. Like, is Verdugo the centerpiece that you want in a Kluber deal? Like, based on talent in a vacuum, possibly not. But he's such a good fit in terms of a major league ready piece. He'll be controllable.
It's exactly what they need, yeah.
And so,
but
how far does that team fit raise his value, and does that meet up with what you want? So if the Indians can work out a three-team deal, that all that does is just increase the number of scenarios that they can find what they're looking for.
I mean, if you say, you mentioned the Michael Brantley comp, and some people have said that. He has to show that he can adjust his batting profile a little bit, get the ball in the air a little bit more to increase his value, but certainly seems like a pretty safe prospect. Let's say he is Michael Brantley, somewhere in that realm. And, of course, Brantley had injury issues. But let's just say what you kind of thought about as solid to peak Brantley throughout the years.
Yeah.
If he's that for 6 years, is that worth Corey Kluber for 6 years of that? If I gave you the guarantee that he is
3 years of Kluber... It's close.
Now, keep in mind, you're getting 3 years of major league minimum contributions from this kid, too. So that turns into probably four pretty cheap years of an outfielder. That enables you to make moves elsewhere. That's valuable in itself.
Is it possible Kluber is more valuable in that scenario, but the Indians could still do that trade just based on roster and need?
Well, I mean, you're
need.
Not... And you're also getting back other pieces here. I just... Looking at the one for one, if that is the guy that you're sort of building this trade around, are you happy with that?
I don't know.
In a vacuum, probably yes. But knowing where the Indians are positionally, where they're structured into just the overall state of the game, maybe not.
What brand of vacuum?
I would say probably Hoover.
Mm.
Shout out to the fine folks down in Stark County.
Do they sponsor us yet?
I was waiting on that.
It's going to be interesting. I don't know. I would guess if something is going to get done, it gets done next week. But it's like when they made that three-team trade for Bauer, they did a lot of the groundwork at the winter meetings and then about a week later completed it.
Was it even a week?
Maybe less than a week.
It was even shorter, yeah. Like that weekend or something like that.
Yeah.
But that was a similar situation. Where you had the Indians interested in Bauer. They knew Arizona was ready to move on, but they couldn't find a way to get together on it. And the Indians wanted to trade Chu.
Well, don't give it all away. They can read this on The Athletic pretty soon.
It didn't all line up. So that's where they had to bring in a third team. And that's what I'm just thinking about every scenario that could exist. It's a weird position to be in where two contenders are trying to make trades together. You're thinking about two teams that are contenders, probably are run very, very well. So you're not going to swindle the other person.
Right. It's a lot tougher. You know, there isn't that... There are a lot fewer teams that have, like, some clueless GM who you can take advantage of. Teams are so much smarter than they were even, like, 5-10 years ago.
And it's a daunting idea to put Kluber on another contender's postseason rotation.
Yeah, that's what... I kind of asked about
difficult
that.
Thing to...
Like, could you really... And I know they always say we just have to focus on our roster, making it the best we can be. But, like, if they were going to trade Kluber to the Yankees, like, that's... You have to consider that.
It's a difficult pill to swallow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, dealing him to the National League, it's an easier pill because there's a chance you wouldn't face the Dodgers in the World Series. Crazy shit happens. Guys get hurt. So you would just be pushing off that chance further and further into the horizon. But yeah, the Yankees, good chance you'll be playing them. Then you'd have to face the guy that's been shoving for you for years, and all of a sudden could shove against you. It's tough. I don't envy their position.
Any Vegas observations you guys have had worth mentioning? Still have not seen Terry Francona at the blackjack table.
I still think this is a weird setting for this.
Yeah.
the fact that we haven't been outside in a couple of days has probably taken away my thought about this being Vegas.
Right.
Usually by 2 days in, you've made it up and down the strip and gone all these different places. We've been stuck in here for the past day or so between here and the Luxor and Mandalay shops. It's about the only places we're allowed to go now. No, no, it's just a weird place to do this.
We got to venture to the food court. Bite your tongue. We got to go all the way to the food court.
Okay, what are your guys... As I'm standing here looking at Johnny Rockets, I was not going to name drop them, but I'm not going to shit talk them. Johnny Rockets is fine food. It's a good hamburger. I mean, you have to really do some bad shit to a hamburger for me to not think that it's pretty good. Obviously, Johnny Rockets is a chain, so you get it all over the country. If a person were to say, I love Johnny Rockets hamburgers, they are my favorite hamburgers, there would be like this face from everybody else that you said that to, like, oh, but that's a chain. Oh, you can't like chain food. Is there anything wrong with picking favorites among chain foods? The elitist of food that tell you you can't like if you just happen to like a chain pizza place. I can't think of one that I really, really love. But if somebody said they loved a chain pizza place, everyone goes, oh, God, that's terrible. How can you like that?
Like,
what if that's just
like,
what you
like?
I like
Longhorn. Is that okay?
Yeah, I'm sure there are plenty
of
people that would...
It's not my favorite steakhouse. I'd rather go to,
Texas
like...
Roadhouse.
Red. Texas Roadhouse.
Like, Texas Roadhouse is amazing.
Texas Roadhouse
is
fantastic.
I really enjoy going there.
I recently had a meal there.
If I said that I enjoy going there, there would be some that go, oh, come on, that's a chain restaurant. You got to find some place that's a hole in the wall. Yeah, sure, those hole in the walls are fine, but what if I just have... My taste buds happen to like...
Yeah, that's fine.
I mean, they just...
Something.
And it's convenient.
They just opened a Raisin Cane's in Strongsville, and Zach and I are basically keeping it open.
Well, so a friend of mine texted myself and another friend a few weeks ago and said, for some reason, I have a calendar alert that says the three of us are getting dinner at Texas Roadhouse on December 4th. I have no recollection of why this would be in here, but how does that sound? And none of us had any clue, like, I don't remember saying this, but we were like, but none of us put up a fight. Nope. We all met there and we ate Texas Roadhouse.
Nobody needs
great.
An extra reason.
Yeah.
I mean, how many times, honestly, how many times you go there, ask for the extra basket of bread, only so you can load it in the box as you're taking it home, throw in that cinnamon butter in there.
I also ate an entire bucket of peanuts.
I do that too.
And now I have kidney stones.
Oh, God. There's nothing wrong. If you like, just like what you like. That's my point.
Okay.
Don't let anyone tell you what you should and should not like. And to anyone that I've ever made a face when they say they like a certain thing, I apologize right now.
Alright. So
like what you like.
Going to Johnny Rockets for lunch?
Let's do it.
Alright.
Part two in the books?
We will have a part three. All of your Selby's Godcast needs will be met this week. Thanks for listening. You can listen, subscribe. Leave us a review, please. 5-star reviews earn you a beer if you ever run into us or we host some sort of gathering. And you can listen to us on Anchor, Apple Podcasts, Podbean, Stitcher,
Spotify, and Google Podcasts.
Yeah.
But really anywhere you have a podcasting app, just search Selby's Godcast.
Any final words, Ryan?
Let's get lunch.
Okay. Thanks for listening. We're out.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.